Okay, good morning. So last week we talked about some of the issues related to Mila, and we placed it in the context of a general question as to what exactly is the role of Mila in Geirus. Now we know that we're focusing here on two primarily significant roles. We said it's 3 - 1 + 1. Kabbalah and mitzvahs comes in later. Karbanos removed from the list because they're not practiced today. So we zero in on these two parts, on Mila and Tfila. And we saw, essentially, a question that many Achronim brought up as to how to conceptualize the role of Mila. Do we say that Mila and Tfila are two equal partners, and together they create the Geirus? Or do we say that really Tvila is what creates the Geirus, and Mila is something that must be done beforehand? And that opened up a lot of possibilities affecting issues such as how important is the order, and whether Mila is an affirmative act or simply a removal of a problem. And if it's not relevant, maybe it's not something that we have to pay so much attention to, which is something that's going to come up a lot today. So on our last year, we talked about a fascinating concept, lahalacha, one that is practical and also reflective of a lot of the concepts here, the question of the status of a mal v'lot havel, that if somebody is in between steps, and this certainly is a practical question because it takes some time to heal from the mila, so we have a few weeks in between the mila and the tevila. So what is the status of an individual during that time? And we saw last week that there were a number of possibilities. The Gemara sounds like he's really not Jewish at all, that the Geirus is just not complete, and therefore he's in his first stage. He's in his pre-Jewish stage. Then we also saw a number of Achronim who understood that it's a little more than that, that maybe to some extent the Geirus has kicked in, either to say that he's not an Akum anymore, even if he's not Jewish, or maybe even to go a little further and to say he's a shtickle a Jew, a half a Jew, or a partial Jew. I mentioned last week that I wanted to go back to my elementary school rebbeim, who always said you can't have half a Jew, because they were talking about one parent versus the other. And we see in Lomdus and Hilchos Geirus there are a number of candidates for what it would mean to be half a Jew. So here, to discuss that a little bit further, so I think at the very end, Tyler was raised the question, well, okay, that's as far as mal v'lo tovel. What about tovel v'lo mal? Right, Tyler, you asked that question? I think that's...
Yes,
okay. So you just have to continue talking about that. So that's a fascinating question. Is there any status the other way around to a male who has had tevila but not mila, which would already mean that you skipped a step, already it means something is unusual. When it comes to mal or tovel, it's not unusual. That would be the normal process, mila before tevila. But here, if you skip the mila and you go to tevila, so is there any kind of a status of Judaism that is chal on this person? So lahalacha, we would say no. But it's worth noting that there are some interesting statements in the Achronim about this, which go to the Lomdus, and also, if I could take out a minute for this, just as far as Derech HaLimud and the analysis of different Achronim, that it reflects a little bit about different approaches to learning and different perspectives to halachic analysis. So just to take a minute to call attention to it, and it ties back into our sugya. So there are at least two mechaverim who wrote that when you have a mal v'lo tovel, our subject from last week, that's nothing. He's not a Jew at all. No fancy lumdus, no in-between. The Gemara in Yevamos, the Gemara in Brachos both indicate that he's not Jewish. He's not Jewish, that's the end of the story. But tovel v'lo mal, oh, there's what to talk about. The exact opposite of the approach of a number of the Achronim we saw last week. So these two Mechabrim are the Avnei Nezer and the Chelkis Yoav. And what's interesting, just as far as Derech HaLimud, Rav Shechter often comments that the Avnei Nezer had a unique approach to learning, and that he was, as he calls him, a super, super genius, and he was capable of things normal humans aren't capable of because of his very sharp analytical abilities. And his Talmidim were on a different level, that they didn't necessarily have the ability to do it the same way. So here it's just interesting. Here you have the Avinezer and one of his Talmidim, the Chelkes Yoav, coming to the same conclusion, but there's a slightly different thought process, and it affects the Lundus that we've spoken about. Now both of them make this statement that Tavul V'Lomal is actually a Shtickel L'Jew. There is already a partial Geirus, even though the more popular possibility of Mal V'Lo Tavul, that they reject. So how does the Avnei Nezer come to this conclusion? The Avnei Nezer, this is in Shuvas Shin Dalid Mem, it's called polite Hebrew, Shin Mem Dalid. So in that Shuva, 344, in Yeridea, so the Avnei Nezer goes through the question of Bizman HaMikdash, if you didn't have the Korban, would a person who did the other two, Mila and Tvila, would he be Jewish or not? And essentially, the point he makes is that if there's some scenario when you could do without it, so it must be that the Geirus could exist without it. Or at least that's something to consider. So since nowadays we have Geirus without the Karbanos, so on some level, Mila and Tvila is enough for Geirus. So taking that further, says when you look at Mila and Tvila, they're also not equal, because women can convert without Mila. And as we mentioned last week, it's something to pay attention to, because if Mila is really important, even though, okay, in Achanami, it's impossible for women, what does it say about it that women can convert without Mila? So to Avnei Nezer, it says a lot. Says that, therefore, it must be that even though Mila without Tvila, that's nothing, because Tvila is crucial. But Tvila without Mila, that might be something, because if for a woman it's something, it means in the abstract it's something. So that's essentially his path to get to that conclusion. Moshe?
Yeah, isn't there a distinction between Karbanos and Mila? Because for Karbanos, we're hoping that it'll be reinstituted. But by Mila, the woman can never have it ever. There's no potential for Mila.
Correct. So you say it's a fair point, and his original point is subject to some debate for sure. And as he traces it, a little bit of a machlokus among the Rishonim. So I think you're right, for sure, yesh makom l'chalik. But especially focusing on the Darasechem, which we're going to get into a little bit more when we talk about Bezdin, his point essentially is that there's a model of Geirus that exists fully without the carbon, so therefore it must be that these two are what makes it. But then looking at the role of the female, he says he could narrow it down even further. It's a big chiddush any way you look at it. Shlomo.
Were you able to repeat the last one? I just missed, according to Avin and Ezer, what he says about Mila versus Mabolo Tabo versus Tabo Lamal.
He's basically saying that they're not equal, and it leads him to a conclusion, the opposite of many of the Achronim we spoke about last week. Now, we saw many Achronim who thought that Mila, despite the fact that the Gemara says, if you have Mila without Tvila, essentially the Gemara says you're not Jewish, but because of various questions, so a number of Achronim said, you're a little bit Jewish. It's not nothing. The Avnei Nezer disagreed with them and said, no, it's nothing. Like the Gemara says, nothing. But the other way around, Tavol V'lo Mal, that might be something. Why might it be something? Because if for a woman it's something, it shows you could have a Geirus with just Tvila. So therefore, it has some kiyum for a man also. Now, the Chelkes Yoav, his Talmud has a different approach to this, and it goes to Reshef's point a little bit. Tyler, you have a question?
Can you maybe just repeat the case in Yoridea Shin Mendalis?
That's his true, but it's not a case. He just talks about this whole question.
What did he say?
Oh, he starts talking Bizman HaMikdash. We know nowadays you can have a ger without a karban. But what about Bizman HaMikdash when karbanos are possible? So let's say he doesn't bring a karban. So is he completely non-Jewish, or do we say that, no, if he's Jewish right now in 2020, or be more specific, in Tammuz, so maybe things will change next week, so then he's Jewish then also. So similarly, if a woman is converted to Judaism with just tefillah, maybe a man is also on some level. So the Chalkas Yoav has a similar conclusion, but his lumdus is different, and it goes to that broader point of the style and the approach of the Amenezer and his students, that basically he says that he brings rayas from other places in Shas, that when you need two steps to something, one step alone does something, even if it doesn't do the whole job. And that, through Shef's point, essentially, that the Avnei Nezer's Godless was about seeing the whole Torah as one idea and being able to understand every sugya so deeply and precisely that he knows what you can compare and what you can't compare. So here, one of his Talmidim is taking a broader approach and is saying that, okay, we can bring together many cases in the Torah where we find there are two parts to a process. And in those cases, if you have one part of the process, it's still something. There's some significance to half of the process. So he's working off the assumption that we can compare gerus to chalitza, to hafaras nedarim was in last week's parsha, to other areas of the Torah where there is a combination process, a compound process. If you have just one part, something was accomplished. But then he asks on himself, hold on a second. So then it should be that malvolo tavol should also be a shtickle of Jew. Right, and like the Avinezer, he rejects that. At the bottom line of the Avinezer and the Chalkas Yoav is the same. They both say mal velo tavol is nothing, tavol velo mal is something. So according to the Chalkas Yoav, that one out of any two parts does something. So we should say also that mal velo tavol is something. So why not? So here he goes on to prove, again, coming from other sugyas in other places, but he goes on to say that if the two parts aren't equal, if one part is stronger than the other, then only the stronger one makes a difference by itself. And he says, Tevila must be the stronger of the two, because there are circumstances when we would do without Mila, but we would never do without tefillah. So yes, we just said about the woman, but he was saying beyond that also, that the different scenarios that we spoke about nichras hagid and other such situations, there are times when it might be possible, even with a male, to have a gerus without milah. But we'll never give up tefillah. Tefillah is always a crucial process. So therefore, he concludes that one part is enough to make a difference, but only the stronger part, and the stronger part is tefillah. So, tavol v'lo mal, he says, that's a shtickle of Jew. And he says he's chayiv in all mitzvot. He can't do any averos. So a very big chiddush. And as a consequence, he says, at that point, it would be proper for a Beis Din to push him to complete the process, to do the milah. And they could even force him to, because once he's gone that far, and he's now obligated in mitzvos, it's a zchus for him to finish the job. All a very big chiddush. And then he goes on to address my elementary school rebbe, and he says, don't tell me there's no such thing as half a Jew. because it's possible, and he brings points like this, that it could be such a thing that you could have a partial conversion. And that's what we have here. So it's a fascinating idea, and it displays a little bit about this whole dynamic in the approach to learning. The Avnei Nezer and the Chalkes Yoav of the Talmud, how they both came to the same conclusion from a different approach. And there's a lot you could want to write a PhD about that. Please go feel free. Be very enthusiastic to read it. But just an interesting observation while we're in the sugya to see how they compare to each other. But the point was not accepted by other poskim. Rav Asher Weiss, in that piece we mentioned last week, he makes quick reference to the Chalkes Yoav, and he says, Dibrei Chiddush, this is just all a big Chiddush, this is not something that poskim have accepted. And the Nitziv has the tshuva. In the Chelek Hay of the Tshuva's Meshuv Dover, the Nitziv has the tshuva where he doesn't identify anybody by name, but he says very strongly that possibility that Tavol V'lomol counts for anything is completely out of the question, and for sure it's nothing. And anyone who would say that is a terrible machmir, because he's imposing all the burden of mitzvos and their consequences on somebody who's not Jewish. And like we spoke about day one, you could be a tzaddik and you could have olam haba as a non-Jew much more easily. And why is he being so machmir on this guy? And it's terrible. And so that's his position. So the halacha, I don't think there's much acceptance of that possibility. But that's the general machlokas over there. Okay. But let's segue from that into the practicalities. What if you have a male who is unable to have tefillah, unable to have milah? So could that geirus be kosher? So we already saw in Shulchan Aruch, a discussion in the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch quoted it, we saw that if it's a physical impossibility, nichras agid, that it is possible, then he's treated like an akeva for these purposes. And we saw that if there is a previous mila or is no lev mahol, so then it was machlokas again. But hatafas dan bris seems to be the approach. But what about another level? What if there's a sakana involved? What if the individual in question wants to convert? But is hemophiliac. And so hemophiliacs have to be very careful not to get cut, not to bleed, because they can't stop the bleeding. It's very life-threatening. Or, say, halachically, so we know there is a din of mesu ech of machmas mila, that if you have a boy who had two older brothers, Rachmal Litzlan, who both died because of mila, so that's considered to be a chazaka. Two is a chazaka by mitzvah, and we don't give the mila to the third one. So what do you, if you have a ger in that category? So can he convert without mila? What would you say about that?
We're asking if a ger had two older brothers who also, for some reason, did circumcision and they died?
Yeah, there's a couple of scenarios you can imagine why that happened. Either they did medical circumcision or they also converted. There's a couple of reasons why that may have happened. So, what would the story be there? Yeah, Elliot?
Why would we think that's always been a halak in the first place between a physical onus and a sakana onus?
So that's a good question. You're saying you think it's comparable. And therefore, you should let him skip the mila. So here, this also has a story behind it. Not as dramatic as the story last week with Mal Shlo Tavo and Shmuel Salant being out of town, but literally speaking, it's a story that it's brought. The Azayim LeTorah, the very popular Sefer on Chumash, deservedly so, beautiful, the very Torah on Chumash, written by the Litzke Rav. So Litzke Rav, in his commentary to Parsha Shmos, so he talks about Yisro, and how Yisro underwent a mila in order to convert, according to one possibility in Chazal, even though the Jews in the Midbar didn't undergo mila because it was considered dangerous. So apparently, Yisro, as part of his conversion, he did take on Mila, if you put all those parts together. So in the course of that discussion, he notes that there was a certain Mechaber that was about to publish a Sefer, saying that in a situation of Sakana or Meitzuech of Machmas Mila, that you can have conversion for a male without Mila, and that Rav Chaim Moshe Grzinski was extremely upset about it. And he told him not to publish it that way. And in the Shuvah Stitz Eliezer, he notes that there is such a sefer. It's called Chazon Moed, where you can see from the table of contents that there's something crossed out, that was crossed out because of this. But the truth is, there's another example also. There is a sefer you can find on HebrewBooks.org. You can look it up. It's called Tshuvas Chai Olam Nota by Rav Nota Olevsky. It's written about 85 years ago or so. And in that sefer, he has a question. He has a discussion about this issue. He doesn't conclude. He has a couple of back and forth correspondences about it, about this question of whether there could be a gerus without Mila for somebody who would be endangered by the Mila. And in that sefer, there's a haskama from Reb Chaim Moshe Grzinski. So I always wonder, you know, it's always kedai to read the haskamas. There's a lot of history behind that. So if you read the haskama of that sefer that Reb Chaim Moshe wrote, so he says, beautiful sefer, nice things about it. But in the middle, he says, I just have to say something, that in this siman and that siman, and chavav, chavzayin, chavchet, there's a discussion about the possibility of entering into Geirus without Mila, if it's a sakana. You shouldn't even talk about such a thing, it's impossible, it can't be, it makes no sense, and no way, should better off you shouldn't talk about it at all. So it's another sefer where Chaim Moshe was, I think it was different than the sefer that the Litzkarav was talking about. And on the bottom of the Haskama is a footnote, which I guess the Mechaber put in. He said, it's a mitzvah to listen to Gedolim, so based on what Rav Chaim Moshe said, if you read the Simanim, Chavav, Chavzayin, Chavchetz, where I talk about this, you know, don't take that Lamaisa. Of course, not Lamaisa. Rav Chaim Moshe already declared that it's not a possibility. So, it's not as dramatic as the story as last week's story, but it's a shtickle story also. So this was a big fight. And there were a number of other poskim who also got involved and came to similar conclusions, such as, for example, Tzvi Yesh. Tzvi Yesh also has a tshuva where he takes such a position as well. And a number of others also assume like that, that we have to distinguish, and this goes to Elliot's questions. He says, so why should we distinguish between physical illness and halachic onus, right? That was the question before. So Rav Chaim Moshe addresses it in the Haskama. He says, and there's also tshuvas from Rav Chaim Moshe that were printed, the standard Achiezer is three volumes, usually printed in one. But there's also an additional volume, it was published the Ksavim later. So in Chelek Dalet of Achiezer, that was released separately, there are a few short pieces he has about this issue. So it's there as well. So Rav Chaim Moshe says that no, there's a difference between where it's actually physically impossible and where it's possible but there is a sakana. And it all really goes to the Gemara, because when the Gemara is trying to figure out what's ma'akev and what's not ma'akev, what can you learn from a female conversion to a male conversion alike, so the Gemara has the language of a lomdim. You can't learn something that is possible from a situation where it's impossible. So it goes to the question of how do you define impossible? Literally, physically impossible? Or halachically impossible or the like? So this was a major issue that here you have many who were opposed, and the Rav Chaim Moshe are very prominently among them, the Tzvi Yesh, But there is, and this is also a very important discussion to appreciate as far as Geirus is concerned, there are other voices as well. Rav Asher Weitz has a tshuva about this. He also has a discussion about this in his Sefer and Chumash and Bereishis, in Lech Lecha. But he also has a tshuva about it in Chelek Gimel, of the tshuva's Mechus Asher. And there, he essentially makes a few very important points. And he says that he thinks there is room to allow such a Geirus without Mila. But before he says that, he says, first, okay, let's accept the fact that you can't have a Geirus without Mila for this case. So, is it mutter for this person to try? Let's say he says, okay, I'll take the risk. I want to have the Mila so that I can convert. So first, his opening assumption is, and he finds that the Derech Pekudecha says the same thing, says that you could take on this danger. This is something which a person could choose to do if they want to convert so badly. And it's probably subject to chilukim, yesh v'yesh, that Mesu Echa Machmas Mila is more of a halacha, sees that as a sakana, and exempts a Jewish baby from a meal under those circumstances. But if you had asked the doctor, is it really such a sakana, so maybe he would say it isn't. The hemophiliac is a very different story, and there's different degrees as well. So the whole question about what that would entail is subject to a lot of practical distinctions. However, Rav Asher goes on to say that he thinks that there really is a svara to say that the Geirus could be kosher if without a mila. And this, he basically is tola on two issues. One of which, first of all, what is the halachic status of someone who doesn't have a mila because of sakana issues? So is that person called an aro? So I gave you some makaris about this morning sheet, if you had a chance to see, that Rashi in a few places does use the word aro for that, or interprets a line in the Mishnah as referring to Meisu Echav Machmas Mila when it uses the word aro. And Tosfos, in different places, Tosfos says it's not called an aro. So that's a part of the discussion. You know, if we're trying to make sure that the individual is not an RL, so would you be called an RL if there's a medical reason not to have the Mila? So that was a machlokas rishonim, and there's a lot of nuances in that discussion. Is that the same issue for a Jew and a non-Jew? Is it the same standard for normal Mila and for Geirus? Or maybe even Rashi only meant it for limited purposes? That's one issue. So the question of, is it really a RL that we're dealing with here? But he also assumes that this connects to the issue we were talking about last week. The question of, what is the role of Geirus and Mila? How does Mila play a role in Geirus? That if Mila is a fundamental part of Geirus, so then we have an issue. But if Mila is not really what Geirus is, Tvila is Geirus, and Mila is just something that needs to be done, so maybe if you have a doctor's note, not to put it mildly, but maybe if you have an issue here, so maybe that would address it, and maybe it wouldn't be necessary for, Geirus. Now, you could probably throw in here also, going back to Eliot's point, those who were in the shiur with us this year, we're learning chulin. So many months ago, we talked a little bit about daf yud and daf yud aleph and chulin, chamira sakanta meisura, what exactly is the status of something that comes from a vantage of sakana, and how the halacha looks at that. So it goes to Eliot's point, should we consider it actually impossible if this is considered to be a sakana? Should we say it's ki'ilu, it's just not there as an option? There's probably room to be mafapal about that as well. But his main focus is this point, that if we assume that the Geirus really is in the Tevila, and the Mila is the prerequisite. So then, that could be workable here. And he also then goes on to add a Hashkafic point. This is that essentially, and he brings proofs to this from other places, other areas of halacha, says that it doesn't make sense to say that you could have somebody who wants with all his soul to convert to Judaism and to enter into the presence of the Shekhinah, and because of a medical condition that's not his fault, is held back. So it's just, logically, he says, doesn't think that could be. And he makes this comparison, but it's similar to the point of L'dor HaSeichem, that just like we can't have a time in history when Gerim are impossible, and that's why the Karbanos are not Ma'akev, so we can't have an individual who is otherwise totally appropriate candidate, but because of a medical condition is going to be excluded, because that doesn't make sense then. So for all of this together, he is inclined to believe, without a full proof, but he's very inclined to believe that it is theoretically possible to have a Geirus without a Mila for this person. Okay, everyone following so far? However, now whiplash go into another direction. And here all of this is important just to appreciate the nuances and the realities of Geirus. He says, even if I'm right about this, says Rasha, he says, it's not practical. Because you can't have Geirus, which some people hold from and some people don't hold from. Even though we do have that in the world, so we have to keep that to a minimum. So the idea that he's going to be besafek kol yomo, some people are going to accept him, some people are not going to accept him. So practically speaking, it's just not a path. This is conceptually, it makes sense. Lumdus-wise, he thinks it makes sense. Conceptually, that it should always be possible, also makes sense. But practically, to bring somebody into a Geirus like this that's going to put him in the twilight zone in all of his interactions is not an Eitzah. It's not something that we really can take on. So then, what can we do? So, the last part of his tshuva, this is in Chelek Gimel Semenayim Ches, by the way, in the tshuva's Merchus Asher. So, he said he considered what are other possible approaches for this individual. And he considers the question, what about Mila with a laser? And you could have a laser that would make a very precise cut, and there wouldn't necessarily be any bleeding. So could it be valid to have Mila with a laser? What do you think of that one? Guess we want to go to that press. It's more exciting than the other.
How does the laser work? What happens?
So laser is light amplification by simulated emission of radiation. That's what it stands for. So it concentrates light in such a way that it has the power to burn very powerfully and very controlled. So you could create a cut right there without anything going beyond it. Shlomo?
I'm pretty sure from what I learned in the past is that you can use anything to do a Mila.
Okay.
Any type of utensil, but I think it's a coal modeling that you can use any Correct. Type of utensil. So in that aspect, it would probably be mutar. I guess one of the questions is, do you need some sort of blood to come out of there? That's primarily why we do atapa. So if you don't actually need the blood and it's more of a hider, then it seemingly would be okay to use the laser for a meal.
Okay, very good. So essentially, that is one of the issues that he deals with. The Rasha breaks this down into three parts, this question. And the first, and maybe the second also, you just addressed. So the first question is there any regulation for what needs to be used for a Mila? So it is explicit in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, like Shlomo said, that you can be mulled with anything. So presumably, you should say, a laser beam too. So why would you think about it? Because maybe a laser beam has no mamashus that you can see at all. Maybe we mean anything. It's got to be a thing. But here, the laser is not a thing. It's just light, and it disappears. Maybe you could think that that doesn't count, but ultimately, he says he thinks that does count. And it's certainly an action of a person controlling it. And that should count. He notes that the Minchas Yitzchak, Diane Weiss, has a tshuva also, where he allows laser when there's no other option. And he distinguishes between a thumb, if you were to use some kind of a application that would make that happen, says that would be a grama, that would not even be a mysis, that would be a problem. But the laser is an action, and so it's maybe not the number one choice. But it is something which at least the diavet could be acceptable. Shlomo?
Can you say that the machine that controls the laser, like the actual pointer or whatever you want, whatever you're using, is the actual utensil, and the laser is kind of like some like a grumma, I don't know if you want to call it that, that comes out of the laser, the actual utensil that's shooting the light beam out?
Yeah, I don't think you would call that a grumma, even if that's the way it works, any more than a bullet is a
right.
is a grumma.
Because there are cases in the Gemara where someone shoots an arrow for shechita, for example, and then, you know, it hits something else and then shechts the bird
right.
and something like that. Because shechita is also similar that you can use any sort of utensil also.
Right, but here we're not talking about hitting any other item. We're talking about it. So it's like an arrow.
Right.
So that question he thinks he could answer satisfactorily. Is there an issue that there should be blood, there should be pain? So there were those who thought that. He doesn't think that's necessarily the case, or that we have a rock-solid source for that, and that should be ma'akev. He doesn't think any of that is convincing. And he also notes that l'chachila, even though we say you could use anything, but l'chachila, there is a preference for iron, for metal. But why is that preference there? A couple possibilities. One is the levush. Levush says that's able to be sharp and solid, and therefore it's less painful, so better for that reason. So he says, if that's the reason, first of all, it's a l'chachila, so we don't have to necessarily worry about that, but it's the logic that it's based on minimizing the pain, so this will minimize the pain even more. So all the better. So that, he thinks, is also satisfied. The next question is, what about the Priya? So that's tomorrow's Daf Yomi. We're just circling the Daf Yomi here. We were referencing yesterday's Daf Yomi and tomorrow's Daf Yomi. So Kuf Lamed Zayin, the Gemara tells us that Priya, which is uncovering the area after the cut, so the Gemara says, Mal v'lo para, kilu lo mal. These are two crucial parts of the Bris Milah. So he tries to figure out there whether it's shaykh to do Priya through the laser also, which is apparently more of a challenge. But in the context of that, he also considers the question whether, even though the Gemara says that the milah of a baby boy needs to have Priya, or else it's no good. Again, you'll learn tomorrow's Daf Yomi and see all the implications of that. Is that also necessarily true for Geirus? So he quotes Machlokas about that, but ultimately notes that the Or Zaruah sounds like it's not necessarily a requirement for Geirus. He has a couple of reasons why he thinks that could be accommodated as well. You might be able to throw in that may also connect to the question of what exactly is it that we want for a Geir? Is it that we want the mitzvah smila, the same mitzvah smila that applies to a baby boy? Or is it a milah l'shem geirus, which may have its own rules? And if there's a distinction to be drawn on this issue, it may tie into that question. And then maybe there's also room to say that the Gemara also says that despite the fact that Priya is so important, but Priya lo nitno l'Avram Avinu, that Avram didn't have this as part of the mitzvah. There's a whole Beis Halevi about that, a whole discussion of why the mitzvah was actually different for Avram. So one of the suggestions we had last week for the role of Mila in Geirus might be to echo Avram's Geirus. So maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a little room to say that Priya is not Ma'ake for that reason. Could be. But either one way or another, he ultimately is satisfied with how that could be addressed. So that's how he concludes. That's his suggestion that for such an individual, the laser is the best approach. And probably the coolest also. Yes, Elliot.
I thought in general, I don't know where I'm basing this off of, but it just sounds familiar, that if one is entirely onus and therefore puzzled from something, then an action done like for that in that context doesn't actually hop any kind of halakhic status.
That was a very complex sentence.
If someone who is totally onus from mitzvah sukkah, for example, if they sit in the sukkah, they're not asking time any mitzvah.
So that's the question. There's a lot of details. There's like six steps that have to be figured out there, because theoretically it's incompatible. If somebody really is a full onus, then it's impossible to force them. You have to figure out what you mean by onus. And in general, it's a question of this. Engel has an essay about what does onus rachmana patre mean? Does it mean that you're just off the hook, or does it mean you're actually credited with it? And when we say pater, what does it mean? Because we find pater in halacha with different meanings. So osik mitzvah pater and mitzvah means one thing. Nashim repturus mitzvah shas magrama means a different thing. Ashota pater and mitzvah means a third thing, and they have different applications. So it's hard to draw an absolute parallel because there's a lot of nuances in that sugya. But here, the point is, he's not convinced. Poskim, like Achiezer, we're not convinced that he's potter, so that's where we have to figure out exactly what to do with it. Okay, so having discussed all those issues and the question of pain and the like, that will just take a few more minutes, and then we'll continue with, we'll have to do some more issues of Mila. We'll definitely take it into tomorrow. But what about using anesthesia for Amila? So, what do you think about that? What are the issues in using anesthesia for Amila of a ger, let's say, specifically? Shlomo?
Well, maybe I'm just forgetting. When the one who does the bracha for this, I think this is some of the most important comments today.
Yeah.
The one who does the bracha for the mila is the mohel, right? The ger hasn't reached that point that he's able to do that. So I would assume that he would have to be conscious for that before the anesthesia. Meaning the ger, the guy who's be converting, would probably have to be conscious of that before, you know, the anesthesia kicks in.
It's good that you clarify that he's the one that's got to be conscious. Definitely, if the mole isn't conscious, they would definitely get a different one.
Meaning the ger.
Right, the
ger
should be conscious.
Not,
right, so there are a number of stars in here. So there's two issues to consider. And also there's two plans to consider. So are we talking about local anesthesia, or are we talking about general anesthesia? So this is an issue a number of poskim took up. Among them, the Tshuva Slave Aryeh, who we've mentioned a few times, he has a Tshuva about this, where he considers both angles. And so first of all, is there a need for the individual to be conscious? So like Shlomo is raising. So is it a mitzvah on him? So here, there are those who do note the Gemara from tomorrow's Daf Yomi, also there in Kuf Lama Zayin, that there is a bracha on the Geiris. So the question is, what does that bracha represent? So it sounds like from the Rashba and the Ramban that it's a bracha for the Moel, for his mitzvah. And the question is, what mitzvah is that? That goes back to day one, the mitzvah being the Kabbal Geirim and the Tosa Rush, that's Rush over there, that's a Hechshu mitzvah. So it's not clear that that's enough to say that the ger has to be conscious for this, if it's a hechsher mitzvah of the mole. Others said not that way. Others said he's got to have awareness that he's entering into the shechina now, and therefore for sure he should be awake for that. which again also goes to the question of what is the role of Mila? Is Mila just a prerequisite, or is it actually a part of the Gerus process? So that was one machlokus, does he have to be conscious or not? And then if we say that he does have to be conscious, so then what about local anesthesia? Right? Is there an inyan to feel the pain? Or is that not a crucial part of the process? So here again, there was a machlokas. I believe Aryeh, in his tshuva, he was mekel on both. He went through both these considerations. And as he said, he doesn't think that the pain is a real thing, so you can have local anesthesia. But he's also not finding a real obligation for the ger to have kavanah mitzvah at this particular stage. So therefore, if he was unconscious, he also thought it would be affected. And others disagree. So I think maybe tomorrow we'll maybe add a word or two about that. Partially also because our search for synergy is so important. So tomorrow the daf actually will be Kuflamet Zayin. So we'll just save a few more words about Kuflamet Zayin for tomorrow so you can kind of daf yomi at the same time. And then we'll try to wrap up the other issues of Mila so that we can head to the mikveh right after that, without any shihoi, and without having to wait 2 to 4 weeks. All right, so any questions? Let's quickly recap. Any questions? Everybody good? Okay, so just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we talked about whether there's any status to tavol v'lo mal. There were achronim who thought there was a status to mal v'lo tavol. What about the other way around? So we saw that the Avnei Nezer and the Chalkes Yalav both thought that mal v'lo tavol is garnished against all those achronim. But Tavol Lomol, that is something, that's a shtickle, a Jew. And they came at it for different reasons. As Adonais is saying, it's because when there is a possibility of Geirus for someone else without that, with just Vila, it must be that that's all real Geirus requires, and that some status even without the Mila. And the Chalkes Yov coming at it from a different place, saying that if there's two parts to something, so then one part already accomplishes something. But in this case, one part is stronger than the other, it's Vila stronger than the Mila, so that accomplishes something Mila doesn't. And it is possible to have half a Jew, don't give me a hard time about it, he writes, et cetera, et cetera. And the Nitziv disagrees with this whole plan and says for sure it's nothing and doesn't talk about. And then we talked about what if you, on Isa, have to have Tevila without Mila for a male. Is that possible? So we saw already that if it's physically impossible in the Chesed, or if it's, Mila was already done, Nova Mol, or he had Mila in his non-Jewish state, that's one thing. But what if he's not circumcised right now, and circumcision is physically possible, but it's dangerous? So what's the story there? So we saw a number of Svarim, which apparently had emendations made to them, because they were going to at least consider the issue. And Chaim Ozer was very firm, there is no such possibility. And a number of other poskim, like the Sridiyesh, also felt the same way. However, Rosh Weiss, in his tshuva, and his Sefer and Chumash also, has two modifications to that. So first of all, if the person wants to undergo the sakana, we should let him because he has the right to decide that this is a bigger priority. But he also is inclined to think that you could have a gerus without the mila for such a person, A, because the view of Tosis and other Rishonim that that's not called an aral, and B, because of the tzad, like we were saying, that mila is not really a part of the gerus, it's a prerequisite for the gerus, so if it's attended to from some other angle, maybe that doesn't require to actually happen. Then he goes on to say there's additional conceptual reasons that it can't be there's an individual who's otherwise perfect ger, but he's held back because of a medical condition. And then he goes on to say that nonetheless, despite all that, it's not practical. You can't have somebody who's only a ger to one side, but not the other. It's not going to work. So we have to find an etzah for this person. So he considers the question of lasers. And there that requires him to go through three issues. Does it have to be a certain kind of object or an object in order for it to be kosher for Mila? Does there have to be blood? And how do you deal with the Priya? And he quotes the discussion whether Priya is really ma'akev for Milas Geiris, which would prompt the question, is Milas Geiris really just a kiyum of the Mila for a baby boy or is it its own din? Which would allow for more distinctions. And in that sense, we also noted that Avraham Avinu didn't have Priya, and if that's the reason why we have Geirus as part of the Mila, then that may also fit into that discussion. And then we got into the issue of anesthesia, which is a big machlokas haposkim. But the two issues that are involved, one is maybe even local anesthesia is a problem. Maybe a dafka has to be painful. Is that an issue? And if we're okay with that, then what about general anesthesia? Is general anesthesia permitted? Is it possible to become a ger when you are not conscious during this time? Is it his mitzvah? Does he have to have kavana while this is happening? Or is some other reason why he has to be awake? So that was a big machlokas also. I believe Aryeh and his tshuva was making on both points, but the others were machmir, so we'll pick up and say a little bit more about that tomorrow. Right, so I wish you all should be all a good thing, and God willing, a little bit more music tomorrow. Yes, sir.
What was the position of the
3DH? 3DH was machmir on these questions. He required... that you can't have it without you.
Thank you.
Okay, Yashikach.